Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard.
Spread your wings and fly away. Fly away. Far away. It's late, it's late, it's late, but not too late.
This week in the studio, Queen's News of the World.
He could already see how it would be if we played it in a concert and everyone had their hands in the air and were saying, we are the champions. And I could see that was what it was about. And I think years later we talked about it and he said to me, he said, rock and roll is the only place where everybody has a feeling of like being in a team, but you're not fighting anybody. You know, it's like if you're at a game, you have two sides who are singing their songs and feeling very much part of a team, but they want to kill the other side. The difference at a rock concert is everybody's in the same team. Hi, I'm Brian May of Queen, and we're in the studio with News of the World.
There's an elite short list of bands whose body of work, the further we pull back from their initial period, actually managed to grow in esteem over time. The Beatles from Rubber Soul through Abbey Road, the Rolling Stones beginning with Beggar's Banquet up to Exile on Main Street, Brian Wilson's masterpiece Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, Pink Floyd's 1970s output, and anything bearing the names Jimi Hendrix or Led Zeppelin continue to amaze with every new remastering. But we need to include at least three Queen albums on that list as well, for their songwriting, musicianship, arrangements, and production values were so high in November 1977 when the release of News of the World came out, their sixth album, that it continues to captivate the listener years later. Not since the Beatles' White Album, almost a decade earlier, had a band had the ability and the confidence to put glam, heavy metal, progressive, pop, Latin, opera, gospel, and a blues jam all on a single album and have the public respond by buying 4 million copies. The album cover for News of the World was a bit disturbing. It was a graphic cartoon of a giant robot which had just killed the four members of the band Queen. That is, singer Freddie Mercury, bass player John Deacon, drummer Roger Taylor, and guitarist Brian May, who I asked to explain the cover.
Yeah, this was Roger's idea. He'd seen an old science fiction magazine called Astounding Stories, I think, or Astounding SF, I forget which, but a science fiction magazine. And the front cover was an illustration by Frank Kelly Frias, and it was a picture of a robot, a large robot with this man in his hand, and he was looking up, I suppose, at another robot who you didn't see, and he was saying, fix it, Daddy. Because what he'd done is he'd picked up this man, not knowing what it was, like we might pick up a beetle, you know, and he'd injured it, but he didn't know what he'd done, so he was saying, please fix it. So it looked like, on the face of it, it was a monster who had done something terrible to a man, but underneath it, you suddenly realised that it was a sort of, it was a young, inexperienced sort of baby monster. And he was saying, what have I done? How have I hurt this thing? How can I make it better? You know, not knowing that he couldn't. Anyway, we liked it. And we found out that Frank Kelly Frias was still around and commissioned him to do a cover for us. So instead of him holding the one guy in his hand, he's holding the four of us and dropping us and stuff and looking up with the same sort of plaintive expression on his face.
Should have been sweeping up the emerald bride. He spends his evenings alone in his hotel room, keeping his thoughts to himself. He'd be leaving soon, wishing he was miles and miles away. Nothing in this world, nothing.
Spread Your Wings from Queen's November 1977 album News of the World, with bass player John Deacon writing, "To never lose sight of your dreams." Queen's fourth album, 1975's A Night at the Opera, had contained a dream come true for the band in the form of the unorthodox worldwide hit Bohemian Rhapsody, and breaking the record for the longest number of weeks at number one in their native England. But rock and roll was going through a fundamental purge in 1977, and as guitarist Brian May recalls, Queen was looking to do something different with News of the World.
English traditional recording at that time was everybody has to be sealed off from everyone else. You know, the guitar has to be in this little cubicle, the drums have to be hidden away in this place which is totally deadened, you know, and there's no way that anything shall meet except when it gets on the tape. And I thought it would be fun to do it opposite and just set up all in the studio so we can all see each other and hear each other and play. So you wouldn't be able to change anything, but you would get the live feel. And Mike Stone was engineering, and he was very into it and thought, yeah, why don't we do this? Because that's obviously what people did in the old days, and it used to work. Why doesn't it work now? So we did it one day, set up just, you know, within about a 5-foot radius of each other and played the thing. And I didn't have the song complete at the time. We had just a verse and a chorus, and I said, just try it like this, having played it over to them. And Mike, luckily, had the tape rolling. And the first time we played it through, it had a certain sort of feel. We went and listened to it into the control room, and it sounded great. And we thought, we all loved it and thought it sounded natural and had a nice feel to it, and the sounds were warm. And you could feel that everything was in the same room, you know. We'd always said that was going to be the quick one, because A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races had been so complex and so layered that we said we want to just do a quick one and see what comes out, you know, something which is very straightforward. And It's strange. A lot of people said afterwards, you know, you're kind of following the punk trend or whatever, you know. But actually, it was that was in our minds before any of that happened, and it was going along alongside that. And doing, I remember doing We Will Rock You and all that sort of stuff in Wessex Studios in North London, and the Sex Pistols were being tried out in the studio next door. And the guy was saying, I can't record these guys, they can't play, you know, it's a waste of time. And I remember Fred meeting Sid Vicious, you know, and he said, are you Simon Awful or something, instead of Sid Vicious. My Fred couldn't remember what his name was, and he said, yeah, something like that. I can't remember the exact details. But we were already doing, for some reason, it just had hit us that way. We were already doing stuff which was very sort of sparse and minimal, and a sort of rejection of the fussiness which we'd got into in A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races. That's not to say I don't like those albums, I do. But at that time, we thought it was good to try the other way. So News of the World was really, get back in there, let's play and do something which is raw and recaptures some of perhaps that first album sort of instant magic, you know.
Well, you're just 17, all you want to do is disappear.
Another personal song appeared on News of the World, this one from guitarist Brian May, entitled All Dead, All Dead. But you'll be surprised to learn of its true life inspiration.
Oh dear, this is going to be own up time. I don't think I've ever talked about that track. Nobody's ever wanted to know about that track. It was a song I'd had around for a while about, it was kind of about the passing of friends, and I think it crystallized because I, this is very embarrassing, I don't know if I should talk about this. Well, I think the thing that started it off was my cat, losing my cat. My cat died when I was a kid, and I kind of never got over it. And I think it was one of those things which surfaces now and again in different ways. I think I wrote the song for the album about thinking that I was writing it about something completely different, but I think part of it was sort of getting that out of my system, which is a very strange thing to say. But I think that's what it was about. And we never talked about it. In those days, we never talked about it in the band. We didn't talk about what things were about. Never. which is strange, you know. So it was kind of personal, I suppose, and that's mainly what it was about.
She came without a farthing, a babe without a name. So much ado about nothing was what she tried to say. So much ado, my lover, so many games we played. Through every fleeted summer, through every precious day. All dead, all dead, all the dreams we had. And I wonder why I still live on. All dead, all dead, and alone I'm spared. My sweetheart instead. All dead and gone. All dead.
Even though Brian May wrote the extremely personal words to that song, it was Freddie Mercury that wound up singing them. I was amazed that Brian could pour his innermost private thoughts into a song and then turn it over to someone else to sing. I had to know what that must feel like. Brian May obliged me.
It's very hard, and it's a very good question, Mr. Beard. And it's very crucial. It's very difficult. You're absolutely right. It's hell, because you always feel like the person who's singing it sings it in a different way from what you would, but you can't do nothing about it. And Freddie sings much better than I do, but in some cases I would feel, the original meaning of the song doesn't get across. Now, when I became aware of this, I would try and design the song so that it had a wider meaning, knowing that it would change when it's done in front of an audience. So, for instance, like a song called Keep Yourself Alive on the first album, in my mind, was meant to be very sort of ironic, very sarcastic. And I was saying Keep Yourself Alive actually isn't a very good aim in life. You know, there should be more to life than that, you know. but it became Keep Yourself Alive and This Is Something Great, and I had no control over that. It just changed, and I watched sort of open mouthed, thinking, oh, this is very strange. You know, what has that song become? So after that, I was always aware of what happened, and I used to imagine what it would be like if Freddie was out there in front of 20,000 people singing this song, and I knew it would be different.
In my way,
might you grow a little wiser, a little better every day?
But if I crossed a million rivers and I rode a million miles,
then I'd still be where I started, bread and butter for a smile.
Well, I sold a million mirrors in a shopping alleyway,
but I never saw my face in any window any day.
Now they say your folks are telling you to be a superstar.
Donny Kays,
and I had a million dinners brought to me on silver trays.
Give me everything I need, feed my body and my soul.
Then I'd grow a little bigger, maybe that can be my goal.
I was told a million times of all the troubles in my way,
how I had to keep on trying and get better every day.
But if I crossed a million rivers and I rode a million miles,
then I'd still be where I started, same as when I started.
Keep yourself alive.
Come on.
One of the hardest rocking songs on News of the World is also one of the most personal. Composed like a three-act play, here's the songwriter, guitarist Brian May of Queen.
It's another one of those story of your life songs, you know. I think it's about all sorts of experiences that I had and experiences that I thought other people had, but I guess it was fairly personal, and it's written in three parts. It's like the first part of the story is at home, the guy is with his woman. The second part is in a room somewhere, the guy is with some other woman that he loves and can't help loving and doesn't know what to do. And the last part is he's back with his woman, trying to talk about it and rationalize it and make sense of it all. I think I'd write it almost the same if I wrote it today. It's one of those things which goes on forever.
hardly know your name. And if I say I love you in the candlelight, there's no one but myself to blame. But there's something inside that's turning my mind away. Oh, I could love you if I could let you stay.
It's
in a song like It's Late, I tried to broaden it so that it would still have a meaning which was compatible with, first of all, Freddie and his inner feelings, and also the audience and their inner feelings.
Up next, Brian May reveals the challenges of composing lyrics to be sung by Queen's lead singer Freddie Mercury.
Follow In the Studio on Facebook and visit us online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Queen's Brian May for the worldwide hit album which ruled the sales charts, News of the World.
Hi, I'm Brian May of Queen, and we're in the studio with News of the World.
Although they were known for their ability to combine in the intensity of hard rock with theatrical boldness, Queen refused to be limited to that style. In fact, they would try almost anything musically, including Latin arrangement of a John Deacon song called Who Needs You. I wondered aloud where Queen got all those different styles. Here's Brian May.
I think unconsciously they got into us when we were kids. And there was a revival group called the Temperance Seven in England in the 60s, which kind of brought all that to light again. And I listened to a lot of their stuff. And the arrangements on some of their songs were just wonderful. You know, there would be clarinet and trumpet and trombone, the sort of traditional jazz type lineup, and then with a couple of other things thrown in, like a sax or whatever. And the arrangements are so complex, and the chord sequence is so gluey and warm, that I think a lot of that got into our music somehow. So once we got into arranging, we would do that, and we didn't want to do the normal sort of three chord stuff that rock groups were doing. We wanted to bring in all that emotion which would come in from doing things properly, you know, actually looking at what was happening.
From News of the World, delightful song called Who Needs You. On each of their first four albums, Queen had enlisted the expert production skills of technical wizard Roy Thomas Baker, but by the time they recorded News of the World, Queen had successfully made the transition to self-production. Here is guitarist, songwriter Brian May.
Well, it had been coming for a long time. We always did a lot of our own production, you know, and we always pushed Roy. And Roy was very much changing as an animal, you know, during that time. He started off, I can say what I like about Roy because he's a very close friend, you know, and I know he would say the same about me. He started off really as an engineer who was kind of breaking into production. He was a state-of-the-art engineer from Trident Studios who knew every technical trick there was. So he was just the kind of guy we wanted to get hold of in the early days. In the beginning, he would do everything himself. His fingers were on all the faders, except when ours were, you know, because we were always pushing up things ourselves in the mixes. You know, he was doing all the EQs, all the technical stuff. By the time we got to Night at the Opera, it had changed very much, and he didn't want to do the technical stuff anymore. He was much more of a producer. He had evolved into being someone who more or less sat there and said, well, I don't like that, Neddy, or that's a bit out of tune, or, I think that's rubbish, you know. But he wouldn't be, he didn't have his hands on anymore. So at that time, we were interacting with him on that level and doing a lot of the production ourselves, you know, and using other people as the technical side.
exhibiting the band's rude side, that's Get Down, Make Love, from News of the World. Following the release of the preceding album, called A Day at the Races, at the end of 1976, Queen spent the next year on the road touring. But somehow, by the end of 77, they had managed to write, record, and release News of the World. Looking back, Brian May remembers it as a very prolific period of time for Queen.
We were on a roll, you know, we were just buzzing and we couldn't stop. It was great, you know, everything we did was a little bit better than the thing before and a bit bigger. And we thought, this is the way life is always going to be, you know, we're always going to come back the next year to Chicago and we're going to play to twice as many people as we did last year and, you know, so on and so forth. It was like, let's see how far we can take this thing. We were very excited. It was just like we'd hit our dream. We'd found out that we could tour, we could make albums that excited people, and it was all coming together. And I think we were the two worked together brilliantly at that time. You know, everything that we did on the album, we were half thinking about what was going to happen on tour and vice versa. We would do things on tour which would work one night and we think, ha, that goes on the next album. You know, we were very free in our approach and really drinking in what the audience were doing, because that was a big development at that time. I remember at that time that we would tour places and people would be singing along with us, you know, which was a great feeling. You know, it's just like, ooh, you get very emotional at those points. And we thought, God, there's a whole sort of well there that which needs to be tapped. People come to a concert because they want to drink in what they see, but they also want to participate. They have a lot to give out. And we thought how wonderful it would be to kind of design the act and the songs and the sound and the lights so that people could feel that they did interact a bit more. So that's why We Will Rock You came about, so people could stamp and clap and sing. That's why We Are the Champions came about, because that was meant to be something that people would sing along and say, we are the champions, that sort of feeling like we all together are the champions. That's how they came about, particularly those two songs, which are the sort of anthems of that album. So we got into, you could say in a nutshell, we got into audience participation at that point.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing, we will rock you. A big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. We will rock you. Sing it! We will rock you. Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes, gonna make you zombie someday. You got mud on your face, big disgrace, somebody better put your bag into your place. We will rock you. Sing it. We will rock you. Everybody, we will rock you. We will rock you.
All right.
During our conversation in the studio, Brian May recalls how he first came up with the idea for the song, We Will Rock You.
Generally, if an idea comes, just put it down in the simplest form, like on a little Walkman-type tape recorder I used to carry around. So I think I just sang it into a tape recorder. At that time, you know what it needs. You know, you can hear the whole thing in your head. It's just a question of actually putting it on tape, making it happen. So I could just hear, I just wanted some... To tell you the truth, I blundered. I'll tell you that. I don't usually tell people this. But I thought, you know, I'd seen people in football matches and all that kind of stuff, doing stuff, you know, clapping and chanting and stuff. And I thought it would be the easiest thing in the world for people to go bump, bump with the foot and with the hands, right? So I could just, I thought, well, that's easy. People can do that and they'll enjoy doing that. And then they can sing this chant along with them, you know. But actually, as far as I can tell, although it's still used by football clubs and all kinds of teams all throughout the world, which makes me very proud and very happy, I think the way it's done normally is all clapping and no feet. And that's probably because they're standing on concrete and the feet don't make much noise. But I noticed that in the concerts, if people did it, which they did after a while, they would go clap, 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 instead of bump, bump, crack, you know. And it's only people like the, you know, New Kids on the Block who get it right.
Follow In the Studio on Facebook and visit us online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Queen's Brian May for the anniversary of the worldwide hit album which ruled the sales charts, News of the World.
Welcome back to News of the World in the studio. I'm Brian May, sitting here with Redbeard.
Thank you, Brian. Brian May admits that he wasn't too thrilled the first time that he heard the amazing song We Are the Champions.
It was one of those nights where I'd been working since 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever and got tired and went home and the others put down a demo, which always pisses me off a great deal because I hate being out of the room when something's being done. So I think I got back to the studios the next morning and they played me this thing and I went, ah, that's really very nice. Actually feeling very jealous, you know, and thinking I wish I'd been on that, you know. And they had really a basic track down by that time, I think, and I was kind of quite shocked because I thought, now, come on, Fred. I thought, you know, we know you're very egotistical and everything, you know, and we're known for our arrogance, but are we really going to stand up and say we are the champions as opposed to every other group and every other person on the face of this earth, you know? And he said, actually, that's not what it is. And I don't think he said any more than that. And then I just thought about it and I thought, well, actually, maybe I was a little bit hasty, you know, because he could already see how it would be if we played it in a concert and everyone had their hands in the air and were saying, we are the champions. And I could see that was what it was about. And I think years later we talked about it and he said to me, he said, rock and roll is the only place where everybody has a feeling of like being in a team, but you're not fighting anybody. You know, it's like if you're at a game, you have two sides who are singing their songs and feeling very much part of a team, but they want to kill the other side. The difference at a rock concert is everybody's in the same team.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence but committed no crime. And bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my shells and kicked in my face.
Champions, we are.
I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Brian May of Queen. In the studio, written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.